A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You know what it is this week?
What is it this week?
It's our Valentine's Day special.
Oh, of course it is. It's the Valentine's Day special. Anyway, we've got this list of 100 jokes which we use to test the levels. And we've just worked out this one, haven't we? This is a joke. It's a joke that Pete Otway told in 2016. And he said, I can't exercise for long periods. When I get back from a run, my girlfriend usually asks if I've forgotten something. And we were scratching our heads over that for 5 minutes, weren't we? Until it eventually, the penny dropped.
So it's like when you leave the house and then you come back in straight away because you've forgotten something, so he's not exercising for really at all, so he just runs out and he's going on his run, and then he gets back and his girlfriend goes, oh, have you forgotten something, because he's back so quick. Yeah. It's funny,
is it? I still don't quite see it. I mean,
you don't get it?
Well, I sort of get it, but when he says have you forgotten something, we think, well, yeah, you've forgotten the punchline, because it just seems to be bizarre. That this is a
but depending how they tell it. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, maybe he told it in a very funny way. Maybe I don't know the guy, Pete Otway, but maybe he did. But I'd rather test the level with this one. They say money can't buy your happiness. Well, check this out. I just bought myself a Happy Meal. It's not bad.
I think that's pretty shit, to be honest.
Do you really?
I mean, pretty rubbish.
Pretty rubbish is what you mean. I'd like to start off by talking Thatcher. Now, this fascinates me.
Thatcher.
Because she was always known, especially when comedians talked about her, as Thatcher. They always said, nobody ever said Margaret Thatcher or Mrs. Thatcher. They just said Thatcher. And I'm just wondering what the continuing fascination is with Thatcher. You know, of all the prime ministers we've had, Thatcher, I mean,
she's the most divisive as well.
Well, yes, you say that, because that's sort of gone down in... I mean, she was divisive, yeah, absolutely true.
I don't mean the most divisive at the time, I mean the most divisive now.
Do people...
It's still really controversial. There's still people at college who are very pro-Thatcher and people who are anti-Thatcher, and people really, really hate her. Like, if you dislike her, it's with the fire of a thousand suns, dislike her.
Fire of a thousand suns, yeah, well...
Like, it really does... And some people really, like, respect her and say she did all these things and stuff, and other people really, really hate her. And it still is quite...
But people who really don't know, who weren't around at the time, obviously, because nobody at your college was...
Yeah, but you can have opinions about things in the past.
I'm not saying you can't have an opinion of it. I'm saying it's just fascinating the way people do have an... You know, whereas
yeah, but people have an opinion on Churchill.
Yeah, because that was during wartime.
Yeah, but why is that any different?
I'll tell you why it's different. It's because Mrs. Thatcher is a peacetime prime minister in the same way as James Callaghan, Gordon Brown, Tony Blair, lots of other peacetime prime ministers. For instance, if I asked you about James Callaghan, would you even know the name?
That's a ridiculous argument, because some figures in history are more interesting than others.
What prompted this was there's a statue of Margaret Thatcher being put up in her hometown of Grantham, which seems to me to be about reasonable, actually, because it is her hometown and she was the first woman prime minister. The police are saying, basically, they don't really want this statue to go up because they're going to have to deal with vandalism and people. And I'm sure people will vandalise it. So, in fact, people will probably travel from your mining areas in the north of England to Lincolnshire to vandalise it, or get off the train at Grantham, because the East Coast, that's very handy for Leeds. But it just amazes me that school kids sort of know about Thatcher's, and if you live through the period, the mines closed, but as you've said, they were going to close anyway at some point.
Yeah, but the way she went about it wasn't great.
No, it wasn't great at all.
It was bad.
Yes.
And I understand, I don't have the same abhorrence for it as people who lived through the mines closing and who were made unemployed and who lived through really, really difficult times. We've all seen Billy Elliot.
I was going to say, it's probably Billy Elliot that's...
No, but it's true, though, that it was a really, really difficult time for people. I don't have the same abhorrence for that, for her, because it doesn't touch me in such a personal way. But I do understand it, and I think that people are entitled to vandalise her statue if they want.
People are entitled to vandalise a statue?
But that doesn't mean that there shouldn't be a statue. I think that it goes along with having the statue.
People should be entitled to it. So what should happen? These entitled people who are vandalising the statue, what should, which obviously is vandalism?
Well, they would face... I don't know what the laws are around vandalism, but you would face those. But that's not a reason for a statue not to be built, just because you think it might get vandalised.
But I don't understand what you say. People should be... So the statue should be built, but people should vandalise it.
No, not people should vandalise it, but people, if they want to vandalise it, that's their choice.
See, my view on Thatcher and some of the people that followed her, whether right up to Tony Blair, who a lot of people said is the natural heir to Thatcher. A lot of people did say that, and still say that Tony Blair was Thatcher's child. Not literally, but metaphorically Thatcher's child. But my view is that it's, having lived through all that period, having lived through Mrs. Thatcher and James Callaghan and Tony Blair and Gordon Brown, is that she was supposed to be the great sort of right-wing economist. But things sort of carried on the same. You know, even under Harold Wilson, going way back, you know, he had to go to the International Monetary Fund because the economy was tanking and that sort of thing. And all those measures that Thatcher brought in, they were more or less the same sort of measures that were brought in, except she was a bit more enthusiastic about bringing in monetary policy and all that. But the same thing happened under Callaghan, and the same things happened under Harold Wilson and others. It just is interesting that she is the only Prime Minister of that era that's remembered. Universities in the news again, Ruth. This story says universities should, quotes, decolonise the curriculum to end the dominance of, quotes, white Western values and beliefs, according to advice published by the new regulator. Mm-hmm. It's the first time the Office for Students has lent its support to those behind campaigns such as Roads Must Fall and Why Is My Curriculum White? And to demands to move undergraduate studies away from dead white men. So those dead white men...
Well, no, I think that's an inflammatory remark to say dead white men, because it's a good line. The actual sentiment behind the whole thing is a really good one, of that we study the same figures in history over and over and over again, and the figures who are black that we do study stay the same. So people will always study Martin Luther King and Nelson Mandela, but they don't tend to study Mary Seacole as much as they should do.
I think they do at school.
That was a bad example. So Mary Seacole, I learnt a bit about at primary school, but only a mention of. We learnt about Florence Nightingale much more. All the history I've ever done in school has been white history.
I think it's one of the problems. Everything is through the filter of slavery. Slavery was such a thing for so long.
I've never learnt about slavery, really, though.
Capitalism is sort of built on slavery to a large extent. And that would mean that because blacks were slaves, they didn't have a chance to make...
subjugated. I understand, And it's part that... There's part of the reason why... And that's part of the reason why you have it with women as well. When you do English literature, many more of the writers that you study are men. And that's partly because women have just not written as many books because they were oppressed for so long. It's not just black history, it's like Asian history. We don't really learn about China or Japan. You could study the partition of India, we don't do that. Some people at high school for their GCSE will study the war, then they will study the war again at A level, and in high school they've studied the war. They've studied about, from 1914 to 1945, about 40 years of history in their entire schooling, and never studied anyone who's not white. So, have you ever heard of a thing called deepfake?
Deepfake?
Yeah.
As in F-A-K-E?
Yeah.
No, never heard of deepfake. I've heard of fake news, obviously.
Right, so deepfake, I'm just going to show you an example of it. I've got the link to it, because I think that will be the easiest way for you to understand what it is. So...
And anything at any point in time, even if they would never say those things. So, for instance, they could have me say things like, I don't know, how about this, simply, President Trump is a total and complete dipshit. You see, I would never say these things.
So I'll explain what I've just showed you for the listeners. So it's a video of Obama, and he's saying lots of different things that he would never say, and it looks completely real. And the beginning of the video show, and you think it's just actual Obama speaking because it's so
it
accurate.
Looks real, yeah.
And so it's an artificial intelligence based human image synthesis technique, and you combine and superimpose existing images, so you can get lots of actual videos of Obama speaking, so the way his mouth moves, and there's enough hours of footage of him that you can pretty much get any facial expression or whatever, and then you put that on top of the actual person who will do the voice, but
because it's not imitations, is
it? It's not expressions. So they will move their head and stuff, and then they will put that on top to make Obama's head move and his mouth move and whatever, but the voice is actually Obama's.
Basically, AIs will take Obama's voice and get Obama's voice saying pretty well anything.
Pretty much whatever, but
in a video. So I could say, and the movements are right as well, because AIs will do that. So if I wanted Obama to say, hey, climate change doesn't exist, go out there, do as many plastic bags as you want, burn things in the garden, because we've proved it, climate change doesn't exist. If I could say that, just me saying it, and AI could do it into Obama's voice, taking all the footage that we've got of Obama.
They have to have a video of someone, a real person, actually talking and things, that then they put the Obama like costume almost on top of. And so it's just really, really terrifying because you could basically, anyone could. So at the moment, you can still just about tell that it's not the real Obama.
I don't think you can. That looks real Obama to me.
I think you, when I've read about it and stuff, you can just about tell. But that video is from like a year ago or something. And then if you look at the videos of deepfake from 4 years before that, they look like you can tell instantly it's not a real person. Like it just looks so fake.
So what we're saying is AI is
if it's already that much better in 4 years or whatever, and that's from a year ago, imagine how good it, you know, there's literally, there will be a point where there's absolutely no way to tell, even experts won't be able to tell. So then it's like, what?
I think we're almost at that point. I mean, it's basically
terrifying.
What you're saying, it is terrifying. What you're saying is, don't believe anything you see on the internet.
Don't believe anything you see on the internet, don't believe anything you see on TV. The only way to really know if someone is someone is to see them. Do you know what I mean? And it's also really scary. So I've talked about this before. If you have one of those Alexa things, I think this is kind of hypocritical because there's going to be hours of sound bites of us saying stuff now. But if you look at if you have one of those little Alexa things, because they save absolutely all of that information. I think people who have those are actual idiots. It's true that they say anyone can access that from anywhere, and first of all listen into your conversations, but also save everything you've ever said to one of those, and so then they can take all the sound bites and make you say whatever you want. So like, and I've said this before, like for example, if you the Donald Trump video, but you couldn't see him but you could hear the sound of him saying, you know, grab him by whatever, and that at the moment, or when it came out at least, had weight to it, that we knew that Donald Trump had actually said that. But it's worked in two ways. Is that anyone could make you say anything, but you could also, a video could come out of you admitting to a crime, and then you could say, oh, no, that's not real. It's just someone superimposed.
Brilliant. By the way, if you have got one of those assistants, all you need to say to it is, play Ruthie, Me and My Dad podcast, and it will play it for you exactly. Because, I mean, people do have them now.
No, I understand. Yeah.
I mean, you're actual idiots. We've heard Ruth tell
you
that.
No, I didn't mean it. I meant, like, I just...
It's dangerous. When you
I think they're really scary.
Yeah, I agree.
And I wouldn't have one personally, but... But then again, I also have a phone with a microphone in it. So there's literally, unless you were to go completely off grid, there's really no way to escape all that stuff, which is terrifying.
It is terrifying.
And it also, it creates a climate, I think, of like, you just can never trust anyone.
Some nice emails, Ruth, again.
Oh, I'm not next week, though, when I, because I've called everyone idiots now.
No, that's right. All you idiots who've got these, what do they call it, internet assistants or
something? No, like Alexas.
I know what you mean, but...
And Google Home.
But there's now a sort of...
Oh, an umbrella term.
Yes, there is an umbrella term. I think they call something assistants. But anyway, idiots or not, thank you very much indeed for writing to us. Rob Walker says, hi, Martin and Ruth. First of all, I'd like to say how much I enjoy the podcast. Bless you. And he says, I've got a query. Do you think, this is probably meant for you rather than me, Ruth.
Yeah.
He says, do you think listening to an audio book is the same as reading a book? Do you think you get as much as, keep up the good work, best wishes, Rob Walker. So it is interesting. Do you think... I was used to listen to audiobooks in the car when I was, years ago, when I had long journeys to make, like a 200-mile drive, I would listen to an audiobook. But my mind would drift, whereas when you can actually see the words, I think it's the act of actually seeing the words.
Yeah, I think that is true. And then also not having the... So and depending on the audiobook, the voice is different and stuff. But then people who like travel a lot, anything that makes people read more than they would or makes people listen to hear stories more than they would, then that's always, it doesn't really matter. Do you know what I mean? Like whether it's an audiobook or not.
I've got an email here from Colin Bell. Colin is not the well-known Manchester City inside forward of the 1970s.
Oh, yeah, really well-known that.
says, hi, Martin, Ruth. As a frequent visitor to the Lake District, I have to pedantically correct a fact. There is one lake in the Lake District.
What?
Yes, there is.
That's not true.
It is. It's Bassenthwaite Lake, he says.
And it's an actual count as a lake.
It's an actual count as a lake. He says all of the others are meres.
Yeah, that's what I thought they were all meres.
Windermere and Grassmere. Or waters, i.e. Coniston Water
and Derwent
Water.
It's so weird
how
they call it Lake Windermere. Mm. Like, it's literally a weir. It's a mere. Yeah. It's in the name. Yeah. But they call it lake. That's crazy.
Well, it's not a lake, as you said last week. But Bassenthwaite is. And he says, when Ruth chooses Lancaster, she'll be able to visit them all. Colin Bell, not the Colin Bell, and he's put very usefully, you know, because you often suspect these people are just my cronies. He's put Martin Crony checklist, age 50, fighting talk listener, tick, talk sport listener, tick, always correct my 24 and 20 year olds on their use of less on the occasions that it should be fewer, tick. So very much in the crony department. Andrew Mannion says, interesting piece on the infantilisation of TV. I agree there is the more highbrow probing on at the moment, and Ruth cited some excellent examples. The issue today... Yes. The issue today is the scheduling. Prime time TV is appallingly bad and infantile. 20 years ago, he says, I'm only 34... Same means when he was 14, 20 years ago, primetime had quality chat shows like Wogan or This Is Your Life. Today, these types of shows wouldn't work. Even the National Geographic Channel, which was once the paragon of educational TV, is a pit of gold rush and deadliest catch and a result of the more general infantilisation. Brilliant. And he says, P.S. the G is silent in my surname. And where you got it?
What was his name?
His name is Andrew Mannion. It's spelled M-A-N-G-I-O-N, but it's pronounced Mannion.
Interesting. So, like onion.
Yeah, very much so, but with a G. Stephen Swinburne, who very much is a crony, so much so he subscribes to my other podcast.
No.
Yes. How much of a crony?
I didn't know they existed.
Regarding the Liam Neeson story and whether he made his story up or heard it from
somewhere
else.
It's amazing, though, just quickly. That was everywhere last week. Already, literally no one cares anymore.
No.
Do you see how quickly stuff...
Precisely.
In the 24-hour news cycle.
People always used to say, oh, it'll be fish and chip paper tomorrow. And obviously now fish and chip paper isn't newspaper.
Fish and chip screens just in between a computer.
Anyway, he says, regarding Liam Neeson, whether he made it up or heard it from somewhere else, if in his version of events you substitute 40 years ago with 1974, his friend with wife, raped with murdered, Akosh with a gun, and black man with New York hoodlums, then you have the exact plot of the Michael Winner film Death Wish. So a film which was really...
I thought you meant his actual wife, because obviously his wife...
Died in a swing.
Yeah.
And he had a series of long-term relationships with actresses. I think he was with Helen Mirren for...
He lived with Helen Mirren.
Yeah, for about four or five years, didn't he? And then
they were on the Graham Norton show together as well, which is quite weird.
They?
Obviously...
It was years and years after.
Yeah. They were together when they were both, young.
Yes, anyway, apparently the film Death Wish was remade in 2018 with Bruce Willis.
Oh, I'm sure that is excellent.
And Steve... yeah, I'm sure it is. And Steve Swinburne says, coincidence? So thank you for all those. If you do want to email us, we do love to get them, don't we, Ruth?
Yeah.
I always read them.
What are you implying?
I'm not implying anything. I'm just going straight out and saying it. martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. That again, martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. We'll have a short break and then we'll have some music.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Start with you this week, Ruth.
Okay, cool. Mine is a song called I Wanna Be Cool by Donny Trumpet and The Social Experiment.
I wanna be cool. Alright, be cool.
I wanna be cool.
I ain't trying to be cool. What's it like being cool?
I
just can't stay cool.
I
don't wanna be cool.
I wanna be cool.
I don't want you to be me.
You
should just be you.
There is Donny Trumpet and The Social Experiment. I Want to Be Cool.
So
Mrs. Trumpet must be so proud of him.
This is quite difficult because they've done stuff with Chance the Rapper. Chance the Rapper is massive, mega, mega famous. But they've done stuff with them. And then this is from their album Surf, which is their only album.
Mm-hmm.
They've not got, usually, I can find out with a band that's lesser known easily on Spotify because they have bios and stuff. Donny Trumpet and The Social Experiment do not. Donny
so where did you
Trumpet,
hear it? Where did you pick it up from? Was it recommended,
to me? Yeah. Donny Trumpet is an American trumpeter,
plays a trumpet.
From Chicago. He's part of the hip hop collective with Chance the Rapper and Vic Mensa, amongst other people, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's in the band The Social Experiment, but the songs, when they're who it's by and stuff, it says Donny Trumpet and The Social Experiment, not The Social Experiment and Donny Trumpet is a member of it. So I don't really understand that.
Well, it'd be like The Supremes. It was originally, it came out and it was The Supremes, and then they became Diana Ross and The Supremes because they wanted to promote Diana Ross a wee bit more. So it'd be the same sort of thing.
Yeah, I guess it's that, innit?
Yeah. Have you heard of Prefab Sprout?
No.
Well, you're going to hear them now.
12 days in Paris, and I'm waiting for life to start. In the lobby of the Hotel Charlemagne, they are hanging photographs of rap artists and minor royalty. All cigarettes have been airbrushed from these pictures, making everyone a liar and saving no one from their folly. A As proud as Lucifer, I do nothing to hide my kerosene dress and flint eyes, which, with one steady look, are able to restore to these images their carcinogenic threat.
That's much like the beginning of that Tom Misch.
It is a bit. Well, I thought that's why I thought you'd like it.
No, I like it. Yeah, it's cool.
Prefab Sprout Weird. Were a band in 1978. Mm-hmm. Paddy McAloon is the lead singer. Crazy name, crazy guy. But we used to play them a lot on the radio in the late 70s, early 80s. That one's called I Trawl the Megahertz. And it's sort of a bit of classical, a bit of jazz, the spoken word, which you heard there. Originally released in 2003. It's really good.
It's quite new as well, though. For me.
It
is over a decade ago, but it's new for you.
It's new for me. Well, it's been reissued this month. It's out. It's a brand new album. And I read about it in one of the Sunday papers, and I thought, wow, I love Prefab Sprout, because they were a very radio-friendly band in the late 70s and early 80s, when I was a famous disc jockey, having read about the fact that they've got an album out.
Yeah.
But it's one long piece with, like I say, jazz, classical, spoken word and all that. So it buys into two things we were talking about last week. One thing, as you heard there, was the airbrushing of cigarettes, as she was talking about from pictures, making us all liars. And also long songs, because that song is 21 minutes long. Paddy McAloon brought this out, first of all under his own name, just Paddy McAloon, in 2003, and then reissued in 2019. He says, "Oi, that record was so important to me," because he's from Newcastle, you see.
And then that is a terrible Newcastle accent. You're usually all right at accents, but that was really awful.
It was. Well, it's because I've got a bit of a cold. It was in the flow of things. He says, "I was so disappointed that The Guardian never even reviewed it." Anyway, he said it stayed with them, they didn't review it. They brought it out again under the name of Prefab Sprout. But I would recommend to you that you check out Prefab Sprout's other stuff from the 80s. You would love it. I know you would love that band, Prefab Sprout. Private schools. Where do you stand on
Oh, I don't think they should exist. They do some things. I'm not saying they're an inherent evil. No.
Well, there's been a couple of books out about private schools. One called Engines of Privilege, Britain's Private School Problem. Obviously talking about the fact that most of the people in the government went to private school.
Most
of the people at the top of the media and all that. And a review of this in Private Eye says, worse than all that, the charm, poise and social connection instilled in alumni of Eton, Harrow, and the others, enable them to shine in areas such as pop music and acting, where horny-handed sons and daughters of the soil once got at least some kind of look in. I thought it was an interesting thing, because years ago, the escape from the ghetto, if you like, not quite the ghetto, but if you were a sort of an ordinary lad from Liverpool, the escape was forming a pop group. You could be the Beatles or Jenny and the Pacemakers or the Searchers or any of those. Mm-hmm. Or you could go into acting. Albert Finney is just, Salford lad, went to Salford Grammar School, which, not a private school. But Albert Finney's just died. And then you had all the other guys, the Northern actors, Tom Courtney and people like that. So acting and pop music were a sort
of... Were the places for working class people
and
do well.
Like
yeah,
boxing and football and that sort of thing. But now it seems even that has been taken over by the private schools.
Yeah, and I guess like comedy to an extent as well.
Yeah.
There's a real... So people like Jack Whitehall, and I don't want to sound like I don't think Jack Whitehall's funny. I think he's a really good comedian. But there is a movement of all these like really posh private school, especially boys, posh private school boys who do really funny comedy, but comedy used to be one of the places where it was a lot of working class people making working class jokes, or not even working class, but
I know what you mean, back in the 70s.
But you know what I mean? Or even with people like, I mean, when Peter Kay was at his like real height and stuff, it was more of a place for ordinary people. Yeah. But
is James A. Castor, is he a private school person? You'd think
I would have thought so, yeah. I mean, I do love it.
I've only just...
Graham is... I think he's hilarious, but he went to Eton or something, didn't he?
I think he did. He was certainly a private school guy.
Yeah.
Personal friend, by the way. he is, actually.
No, and again, I think all of them are funny as well, but it just... It's another thing of that.
But you sort of pointed me in the direction of James Acaster, because you're a big fan, aren't you?
Big James Acaster. I think he's so funny.
I thought, I'll watch this. So now that I'm into Netflix and everything, I watched his Netflix special. And it's brilliant. Yeah. It's absolutely brilliant. You know, I would...
He's hilarious on stuff like Would I Lie to You and all those
I'm sort of a bit allergic to those panel shows. I don't like them. But on his Netflix special, is just fantastic. Mm. Just give you one bit, which I was going to use as the joke to test the level, but I rather like it. He does this thing about how childhood's so difficult because everybody all the time is asking you, what do you want to do when you grow up? What do you want to do when you grow up? And he said, you know, one of his uncles came up to me, what do you want to do when you grow up? He says, well, I want to be secure enough in myself so I don't have to go around asking six-year-olds what they want to do when they grow up. That's by the by.
But
stealing a bit of James. People said, you know, when I do the joke at the start and everything, so they said, so what are you doing? You're just stealing other people's jokes. I said, no, curating.
You can't, it's curating, stealing. It's not the same. Yeah. But with the private schools, and I think that one of the main things, less than having like more opportunities, it's the sense of
entitlement
that you get. And I'm not even saying it's a sense of entitlement in a bad way, but you can tell the people who walk into a room and they believe that they belong there and they should be there. And I went to a lecture at Durham Uni, which is famously almost, I think it might almost have more private school kids than Oxford and Cambridge. Yeah. Like, it's so elitist.
I think you're right, because I think they made an effort, Oxford and Cambridge, to have some...
Because they have to, but whereas Durham don't really have to, and it's really collegiate, and it's even the kids who weren't at private schools are often at very fancy grammar schools and stuff. And I went to this lecture, and obviously I don't know these people, but the people who put their hand up and asked questions at the end of the lecture, I would guess that they were private school kids, because of the smaller class sizes, I think you end up being more confident. As much as we can, we should allow kids to start off their life on an equal playing field, which obviously people don't have because some people's parents have more money, and which will never happen. But if we could get rid of private schools, then at least we would be going part of the way.
I think maybe in a way we sort of assign too much to the education system and not enough to family circumstances.
What your parents teach you is just so pivotal to your entire life and stuff. But there's no way to... So there's some people who are not equipped to be parents, and often they will have children who pay for it for their entire life. But how do you ever... that's not always just giving more money and more support to parents. Like, that's sometimes... Some of that is just...
It's just the way they were brought up, possibly. Yeah. There was a politician. He was
You're moving... Just while I remember, and we're still on this, you're moving to an idea of like collectivized upbringing of people. So like Plato in The Republic says that this will make kids the strongest and stuff, but that's what like the Nazis and Orwell refers to in 1984. Do you know what I mean? Then you're getting onto a very scary world.
Interestingly, it's how they bring up kids in the kibbutzim in Israel. When I was in Israel, all the kids are taken from their parents and they go to the children's house, they call it, and they're brought up collectively. I don't know whether they still do it. I think it might have sort of died out a bit there, but it was a key thing in the kibbutzim. All the kids were taken away and they went to the children's house. So, you know, as soon as you had them for the first 6 months of their life, and then they were brought up
only for 6 months.
6 months, maybe a year. I don't know. I'd have to look that up. But then they were taken to the children's house so that the mothers could carry on working in the fields and everything. So the mothers would, there'd be a very short time that they'd be with the mothers. They brought them up collectively, considered to be very idealistic. Tony Benn, who was a very socialist politician, who was one of Jeremy Corbyn's mentors, if you like, he was, I'm all for Israel and the kibbutzim and bringing the children up collectively like that, and the collective farms, which the kibbutzim
were. That's what they used to do in Sparta as well.
Yeah, but it's not turned out necessarily for the good, because if you actually go to Israel now, there's a lot of social graces that haven't been learned, put it that way. Mm. The jury is very much still out on that.
It's very easy to take hold of people that way though and indoctrinate them into a fascist regime and stuff. Do you know what I mean? When you start to educate everyone collectively, you're also making clones of people, which is not great.
let's lighten the whole thing up and finish with Cardi B news.
My favourite type.
Well, I've become a big fan of Cardi B since we played her on the music spot. Mm-hmm. I was not particularly a fan of her music, but a fan. And she did win the best rap album, didn't she?
She did.
And had
she's also quite an outspoken activist now as well.
So. Yes, she is. Well, listen to this. Cardi B and her romantic partner, Offset.
Offset. They all from Migos.
Yes, you see, his mum and dad, Mr. and Mrs. Offset, must be so pleased with him. But anyway,
wow, second time you made that joke.
I know, but it was so good. I mean, it never stops being funny, that one.
Mm.
Anyway, we'll see. Cardi B, who, as you say, is quite active in all sorts of areas, she posted to Instagram footage of the kitchen cupboards in the place, you know, what's in the kitchen cupboards of the place that she shares with Offset. And apparently, they're full of cereal. Not British full, which would be like five boxes, says Caitlin Moran.
Catelyn. Catelyn.
All right, Caitlin Moran. Yeah, so Caitlin Moran says, these cupboards are not British full, which would be like five boxes, but American full, 40 boxes of cereal.
God, that sounds like an absolute dream.
Well, let me tell you what your hero Caitlin Moran says. She says, how do people like cereal so much? Cereal.
What?
Cereal is, and then she uses that S word again. She said, so desiccated and gnarly, you have to send milk in to sort it out.
What? That's such crap.
Well, and she says, and that's Rice Krispies or Shreddies, the healthy, not dangerous stuff. By the time you get to things such as Lucky Charms and Chips Ahoy, that's America. Pretending you could have massive lumps of chocolate or marshmallow for breakfast every day.
But they're brilliant.
And live past the age of 47. Cereal, do you want to know how Caitlin sums it up?
Yeah.
Cereal, she says, it's either boredom or death in a box.
No, it's so good. If I could eat cereal for all three meals, I would.
Well, that's what Seinfeld said, the same thing. He said,
it's so good, and it's crunchy, and also the milk is good. It's just so... And you could have cereal desserts, but also more cereal main courses, like Weetabix. There's those cereal cafes now, which I'm all for.
Mm. Well, there you go. If you want to get in touch with us about cereal or any other major issues that we've raised, cereal... I never got to say the joke about private schools, which was very good, because it's a Samuel Beckett joke. Do you know Samuel Beckett?
Yes, the playwright. Waiting for Godot.
The Irish playwright. Well, he was a teacher at a private school in Belfast. Campbell College in Belfast. He was a teacher there. Mm-hmm. And he quit. He said... He thought it was rubbish. He thought it was Spartan and brutal and full of...
Yeah.
You know, so he quit. And when he quit...
Actually, on this, I've got some friends who have been to private school and stuff, and the girls that I've heard about at private schools are much more bitchy. Can I say bitchy?
You can say bitchy, yeah.
Yeah. And the boys are more mean, and they're more cruel at private schools. And I think that's maybe because they're under so much pressure to do really well, because private schools expect it, that everyone's high school film mean to each other, more so than in state schools.
Well, Samuel Beckett found that. He said it was brutal. He quit as a master at Campbell College in Belfast, and he was told he was abandoning, quotes, the cream of Ulster, and he replied, yes, rich and thick.
That's funny.
So we've curated some fine jokes.
Yes.
If you want to get in touch with us about any of the issues we've raised, private schools, cereal, Cardi B, anything, you can do, it's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
And if you want to listen to the songs in full on Spotify, or any of the songs from any of the other weeks, then you can go to Spotify and search Martin and Ruth, or Ruthie, Me and My Dad, and either of those will get you to the playlist. Did you want me to tell you a meme?
Oh, have we forgot meme of the week?
Well, we didn't, because I...
You remembered it, yeah. I forgot it. Go on, then.
This is like a tweet that someone's taken and put on Instagram as a meme. So, my girlfriend told me to treat her like a princess, so I married her off to a random stranger to strengthen the alliance with France.
good. That will do it for this week, then. So, thank you very much indeed for listening, and subscribe and like. We always say this, don't we? Subscribe, like. We used to think nobody... could care less.
I just think if someone's going to like something, yeah, they're going to like it anyway.
Yeah, but we don't mean like.
They're not going to be like, oh, like it. Oh, okay. Yeah.
No, but we mean like. There's every possibility you might like it, but now we want you to like it as well.
Okay, thank you for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.